There was a specific, a direct request of the elders in New Brunswick as we prepared the program that there be a consideration of conscientious objection and an update because of all the turmoil in the world in the present time and the evolving or now apparent role of the United States as the policeman of the world. And to lead our thoughts, Brother Ken will take over at this point. Brother Ken.
Thank you, Brother Obi, and it's good to see all of you. I know you had a good meal, one of the best meals the college has served for years. So I know you had a hard time. Well, you didn't have a hard time with Brother Ed keeping awake, but I know you're ready for a good snooze now, so if you feel like sleeping, go ahead. It won't bother me. There is a handout being passed out. It consists of 3 pages. Just sit on it for a while. We're not going to use it right up front. I would at this time like to mention 2 brothers in the audience that I highly esteem for conscience' sake. One is Brother Zygmunt Roguski, who was sentenced to 5 years during World War II as a conscientious objector. And the other is Harry Nugent, who was sentenced to 2 years during the Korean War as a conscientious objector. And by the way, Harry is the reason that I have been involved in the CO work ever since he did go to prison. Where's Harry at? What year was that, Harry?
Well, I think it was 52.
Well, if you think it, I'm not sure myself. Okay. When we found out Harry had been arrested because he was not recognized in his claims, I spent several sleepless nights trying to see what could be done. I wasn't involved in the CO work at that time, but I was very concerned. And I did literally work around the clock and working on resolutions and other things. But Harry did end up in prison. And I went up to Brother Martin Mitchell at that time, who was the chairman of the Bible Students National Committee for Religious Objectors. And I says, Martin, that cannot happen again, that one of our young brothers goes to prison in our day and age. And I've never met as noble a brother as Brother Martin in the Truth Movement, before or after. And he said, Ken, welcome. You are on the committee. And we've been in CO work ever since. This is supposed to be a religious conscientious objector update. 95% of the brethren here are not of draft age. But with one major exception, and that's the sleeper. Selective Service has on the back burner regulations that will draft all healthcare professionals up to the age of 45 when a war lasts longer than 6 months. So remember that. And also, you know, I hope that most of you, when you looked at the program, oh, CO, you know, that's for younger brethren. Well, being a conscientious objector is a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle that we live to our dying day, our hope. I'm just going to let me give you an example. When I was stationed at Lyons, I wasn't on the violent ward, but once in a while when they were shorthanded there, I would be sent there. And they had these real heavy chairs, you know, the legs were that thick and oak wood, and so the patients couldn't pick them up, you know, and use them violently. Well, they got superhuman strength, you know. I won't say superhuman, but when their adrenaline glands started working. So this one violent patient, he picked up the chair. And he started charging. And everybody ran to a corner. And I'm going to mention race at this time. Because this was a dear person to me. A young black CO walked up to him. He said, "John, put that chair down, please." John put that chair down. John had such a tremendous respect for this young black CO because of the love, the care, the understanding his daily life just emitted to all the patients. I hope you have the loving care and the sense of justice that is the hallmark of being a conscientious objector. I hope the people you meet daily see your loving care and do not view you as just somebody that acts like I'm holier than thou. First, we're going to give a overview of the Bible student CO position and the committees. You know, back in 1917 with World War I and the United States' entrance into the World War I, most of our brethren were not recognized in the United States, and of course Canada was in the war before that, and they had a very difficult time, and they were treated very harshly. I won't go into that. But, you know, in 1915 and 1916 reprint articles, Brother Russell very strongly recommended not non-combatant service, but even a refusal to take non-combatant service and a refusal to wear the uniform. Well, why? Why the refusal? Well, you walk down the street as a Bible student with a uniform on. They didn't see that little insignia here that you're a member of the medical corps. All they knew, you're in the military. You're a part of that killing machine, and you're a Bible student. Brother Russell said, "What kind of witness is that?" Not only that, do you know how the military defines the medical corps? As an essential link in their total destructive power and force. How could that be? Who do they heal? No, they make judgments on every patient, a wounded patient that comes in. Can this fellow be recovered and sent back on the front quick? If he can't, well, we'll put him on the sidelines. They want to heal, to kill. The medical corps is an essential link in the total destructive power of any military. As we said, our brethren were not recognized in World War I. And when they were inducted, they were sent to a camp that was in the coldest part of the United States. It was wintertime, and they were stripped of their clothes and put outside in 10 below zero weather and said, "Okay, when you're ready to wear a uniform, just walk in. You'll be able to be warm." What would you do under those circumstances? My dad was on probation. He had to report monthly and was on probation many years after the war ended. Then in 1939, Germany attacked Poland. 1940 or 1941, there was the Draft Act passed in the United States. And in 1940 or 41, I'm a little hazy here, the General Convention, then known as the Midwest Convention, passed a resolution. The Bible student leaders insisted that this resolution be passed. And they committed and doomed our younger brethren to non-combatant service, going into the military. And after that, each one of our younger brethren who was well acquainted with Brother Russell's teachings on this matter and believed them biblically, took a stand refusing non-combatant service, but willing to perform civilian service in lieu of military service. And the FBI would investigate the elders and say, well, one of your people won't take non-combatant service. Oh, he should be willing to take non-combatant service. This is our resolution. This is our official position as a Bible student movement. As a result of that, over 12 of our brethren went to prison. Brother Zig was one. Brother Roberts on the East Coast was another. Finally, early in the 1950s, some of us were able to convince the General Convention to pass a resolution recognizing both CO positions, and the brethren could make their choice and still be consistent with the Bible student resolution, either non-combatant service or civilian service in lieu of military service. And then the Korean War came, and Brother Harry was in prison as a result of that. Then in 1957, the Bible student movement started dividing across the country. And I was on the Bible Student National Committee for Conscientious Objectors. I was Secretary Treasurer. I was sponsored by the General Convention and voted on by the General Convention. And I wrote a letter to the General Convention. And I said from that time onward, I would be attending the Fort Collins Convention instead of the General Convention. And that might affect their decision to continue me on their committee, which it did. But anyway, shortly after that, the Bible Students Coordinating Committee was started up to service our brethren in the independent movement. And there is no competition between the two committees whatsoever. We work very freely and openly before each other and try to exchange information. And now we come to the handout. Just to give you a historic background with the Bible students' relationship with Selective Service, you have two letters. One is from the Director of Selective Service. And when General Hershey retired, he wrote this beautiful letter to me. In the last paragraph, he said, "I do feel some pride in having been able to make some adjustment in the operation of Selective Service as it applied to Bible students." We would have meetings with General Hershey at least twice a year, and we would quote extensively from the six-volume Studies in the Scriptures. And the first time we did that, he heard about 10 times in this meeting, six-volume Studies in the Scriptures. He says, "Say, that's a set of six books. They're big red books, aren't they?" Boy, I just, you know, whoo, got real big. And, "Yes, how do you know?" He says, "You know, my parents bought one of those from a bookseller, door-to-door bookseller, back in 1914. And it's on our shelf in the library back home." And he says, when I got to visit my parents and my folks this year, he says, I'm going to look it up and I'm going to check all of this out. But he had a profound respect for Bible students. And then the next letter is from his office. We just want to observe two things. The first two paragraphs just give you an idea of some of the work that is involved during an actual draft. "We monitor all of the court rulings that affect conscientious objectors." And Wes can correct me on this one, but there used to be 10 appeal court districts. And if a court made a ruling to change the application of a CO regulation, that ruling was effective in that district. So if we had a brother who was up and something happened in his case and the law was violated on that particular point that the court made a ruling on that would cover that district, we would bring that to the attention of the National Director's Office, and they were very cooperative And in situations like that, sending all of those cases back to the local board, and as General Hershey told us, once I send a case back to the local board, they're going to think twice before if they don't before they or before they classify him for military service. They'll think twice and probably classify him as a conscientious objector. But then the last paragraph. The Director of Selective Service wishes to express to you on his behalf his thanks for your expression of appreciation and esteem. And now notice this last sentence. It is hoped that the friendly relationship existing between your organization and the Selective Service system will continue and be a model for the extension of such relationship in other areas. Hershey just thought that the Bible students were an ideal group, and he just wished that all other religious groups were sincere and as consistent with their positions as the Bible students were. And these are very precious letters, but more than that, every contact we make with Selective Service, we're on file with them, and we refer to these letters, and they have these letters in their permanent files, and they're very valuable to us by being in their permanent files. Now, your third sheet, Bible Student Coordinating, the communique number 5. Actually, it should be 5A if you want to write 5A in there. And we'll read some of it and observe, make observations in other parts. And this is more of the specific update. It was official. The Iraqi war is over. After all, President Bush announced it. The statues of Hussein have been toppled. Surely the war is over. But is it? Daily, U.S. troops are being killed. And all indications are that the U.S. military will be in Iraq a minimum of 2 years before they can even begin to set up democracy in any seemingly lasting form. And during this long pull, a draft is possible. But not only that, remember the U.S. still has troops in Afghanistan and in Somalia. Well, Somalia, that was just supposed to be for a couple of weeks. Yeah, that couple of weeks has stretched into months and months and months and months. We have troops in Kosovo, in the Philippines. Yes, but they're just military advisors, yeah. That's what they were in Vietnam, wasn't it? Military advisors. And in Yemen, in Colombia, and now the possibility of our troops going to Liberia. And then there is this memo that Defense Secretary Rumsfeld wrote that was leaked, in which he expressed that the preemptive strike at Iraq had worked so well, we should do it again and again. You know, you got a group of men in there that are just war hungry. They're military demagogues, and they just take such delight in their modern weapons of warfare, in defeating others, no matter what the cost to others. So, families back home, they say, why do our sons and daughters have to be overseas in the military for so long? Why can't they be replaced? So this is another reason a draft might be coming. There are 2 draft bills pending on the floor of the Senate. One by Senator Randall, which is a racist draft act. I won't go into the details of that. It won't be passed. But Senator Hollander is submitting one. It also includes a age-old dream of some senators, universal service for all youth over 18 for 2 years. Okay, now, in the event of a draft, all college deferments, or there will be no college deferments, each student will just have to the end of the year to complete. But the order of drafting will be 20-year-olds will be the first to be drafted. Therefore, 19-year-olds should be prepared for the draft by the time they turn 20. And then if they still need a larger grouping, it'll be 21-year-olds, 22, 23, 24, 25, and then 19. And that will be the sequence. Now, I would highly recommend that all 19-year-olds and a half and 20-year-olds that you know of, brethren, they don't have to be here, but if you know of them, I would like to have their name, their address, and their phone number. And if and when a draft begins, I will contact each one of these young people, and I will work with them step by step through the classification process, not telling them what to do, but working with them, stimulating scriptural insights, but making them aware of valuable things that we have learned, steps that should be take place in each step of the classification procedure. Okay, what can our young people do in the meantime? Well, we have a paragraph on that, and the most important thing in that paragraph is getting a letter from five different elders from five different classes as far apart as possible. Don't get them all from the same class, you know, because you go to a draft board hearing and say, oh, you have five ministers in your congregation. Yeah, that's right. How large is your congregation? Oh, 10. Doesn't make pretty good, very good picture. But the reason for five elders from five different classes as far as possible, just imagine the impression this makes and to get the impression across. Think of a Baptist boy. And he goes before the draft board, and he has letters from five Baptist ministers all over the country. Oh, that's a boy. You must be well known in your church denomination. Oh, that's very unusual, almost impossible. But our young people are well known throughout the country. What does this signify? They are active in their religious beliefs. Their religious beliefs and lifestyle are consistent. And this is the concept that we try to convey with having these letters from elders as far across the country as possible, because it just creates the truth that our younger brethren are well known by the Bible students all over the country and are recognized as being sincere. All right, we would recommend that all, especially elders, young people, and elders especially, read this over. And if you know any young people that can be helped with this information, these bulletins or communiques are available. We will also have a registration sheet down by the table where you purchase your meal tickets. And we would suggest that our young people sign that registration sheet, which verifies they were present at this meeting today. And then we have this booklet, Early Christian View of War and Military Service. I have a few with me. This was passed out to everybody last year, and if you weren't here and would like one, I would be happy to provide one with you. And then, just a word about healthcare professionals. You know, we keep telling the brethren about this, and I know in every convention audience that I mention it, there's healthcare professionals out there.
Under 45,
and they don't do anything. I would suggest, even if the draft never takes place, be on the safe side. Write a letter to our committee, or write a letter to the other committee, stating that you are a religious conscientious objector, and that date is on that letter, so 2 years from now, if a draft starts, you can produce a letter that said 2 years ago you're a conscientious objector, and that proves you're not just taking that stand at that time to evade something. And as I sometimes say, some people have the ability to make a long story short, and as you know from this half hour, I have the ability to make a short story long. But I will make one request. I know you are conscientious objectors to carnal warfare. I would like to sing together with you hymn number Appendix G, Onward Christian Soldiers, because we are soldiers. And we have a warfare. We have a battle. We have a victory to win. And together, let's be a united army in singing this hymn. God bless you all. And if you can, please stand during the singing of this hymn.